Before David gives his historical and personal overview of humanism, I would like to read a couple of paragraphs from an article entitled Essentials of Humanism. This is one of the best articles I've read about humanism. It can be found in the spring 2017 issue of UU World. And the article is by Kendall Gibbons, minister of All Souls Unitarian Church in Kansas City, Missouri. What we are willing to say about the universe and our lives is based exclusively on our own shared experience and reason. Because the Bible tells me so, or the Quran, or Jesus, or Jehovah, or the Buddha, or any other religious authorities carry no weight. We trust that which can be proven, either by evidence, science, and careful study, or by the cumulative moral insight and experience of the human race. Humanism is quite the opposite of a religion or philosophy that teaches, as some would say, that we can believe anything we want. In fact, as the Third Humanist Manifesto asserts, humanism encourages us to distinguish things as they are from things as we might wish or imagine them to be. Humanism invites us into compassionate connection with others so that we may build the common good and in that enterprise make our own days glad. It offers us no assurances of divine love or life to come, but rather the assurance that this life matters, that we create our meaning here and now in this very world. It teaches us to find our satisfactions in work and service, rest and love, and to accept our fears and failures for what we may learn from them.
I don't generally like to read things because I like to stand up and wave my hands, but they want me to put it down. I think they want to make sure what I'm going to say. So I'm going to talk about the history of humanism first. Can you not hear me? Mic closer.
Slide the mic over to this.
Okay, is that better?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, the word humanism was first used in the late 19th century to describe Renaissance scholars like Petrarch and Erasmus of Rotterdam. Petrarch, who lived in the 1300s, is often called the father of both the Renaissance and humanism. He rediscovered Roman and Greek authors and realized that human moral thinkers predated Christianity, a surprising thing to the church. Erasmus lived in the late 1400s, early 1500s, and applied rational thought to the translation of and commentary on the Bible. This made him an anathema to the church, since the church fathers knew that thinking, especially about the Bible, was dangerous, and they taught that only the church could interpret the Bible. And if you want to know what they're worried about, you should read the Bible. It has been said that Erasmus laid the egg that hatched into Martin Luther and the Reformation. Erasmus was not a humanist in the modern sense. He was a Catholic priest, but he was much nearer to modern humanist thinking than were people like Luther and Calvin, who both of whom were dogmatic in the extreme. The next figure I'd like to mention is Spinoza, a Jewish Dutch philosopher who lived in the 1600s. He was the first modernish philosopher in that he broke with both Jewish and Christian thinkers of the time. His book on ethics was based on rational analysis, not faith. He reasoned that a person can be good without God, the central idea of humanism. In fact, if you read between the lines, he felt that probably there is no God in the Christian and Jewish sense. This was radical stuff, which got him into trouble with both the Christians and the Jews, and he ran a real risk of getting himself burned at the stake. The philosophy of the Enlightenment, however, was based on his ideas. In the last part of the 18th and early 19th century, humanist thinkers of the Enlightenment tended to be deists. Deists believed in some sort of overarching power in the universe, following Spinoza, not one of the Christian or Jewish sort. Nice examples are John Locke, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and Thomas Paine. I particularly like Tom Paine, a rebel after my own heart. Science was, as opposed to Holy Writ, became recognized as the way to uncover truth. In the last part of the 19th and first part of the 20th century, we have an exploding list of modern humanists. Here are a few. Authors like Mark Twain and Isaac Asimov, philosophers like John Dewey and Bertrand Russell, physicists like Albert Einstein and Richard Feynman, and the cosmologist Carl Sagan. Universalists and Unitarians were involved in the founding of the American Humanist Society. In fact, there's a strong humanist streak in both of those groups. Note that humanism is not a monolithic, unchanging set of ideas. It has continuously evolved from Petrarch to Carl Sagan, always with human reason at its center. Okay, personal. My personal journey is a compressed version of the development of historical humanism. I was raised on the Bible and the Book of Mormon. My parents believed that I was to make my own choice about being baptized. The problem was I was supposed to make the right choice. From the start, I was skeptical about the God, Jesus, angels, prophets, devils, spirits, ghosts, and holy book stuff. However, I finally gave in to the pressure at about the age 10 to keep down the harassment. So I got baptized. As I studied science and history over time, however, my skepticism increased. I just saw no evidence for this spooky stuff. By the time I was in the ninth grade, I was a full-blown agnostic. My classmates in high school thought I was weird. The idea of somebody not being a Christian really bothered them. In college, I also realized that there was no connection between the morality of people that I knew or read about and their religious ideas. Bertrand Russell, Mark Twain, and Will Durant all had a great influence on my thinking. At the University of California, I met many people who did not think I was weird. In fact, they agreed with me. They called themselves humanists. I met and married Bonnie, a fellow humanist, and we have supported each other for 50 years. It turns out that it's a good idea to have support in a sea of people who think you're weird. We have found that it's better to be part of a community like the UUFB. So here we are. I am convinced now more than ever that science is the road to truth, that one can live a moral and ethical life without reference to anything supernatural, and I have replaced I can be good without God with we can be good together without God.
Ingersoll, I'm going to read from a speech that he delivered in 1884. Ingersoll was a popular public speaker in the late 1800s. He was a vocal critic of organized religion. He was also active in politics. His brother was a U.S. senator and an active, gave speeches at Republican conventions, that sort of thing. So this speech is from 1884. It's a few excerpts. The speech is called Which Way? There are two ways, the natural and the supernatural. One way is to live for the world we are in, to develop the brain by study and investigation, to take by invention advantage of the forces of nature, to the end that we may have good houses, raiment and food, to the end that the hunger of the mind may be fed through art and science. The other way is to live for another world that we expect, to sacrifice this life that we have for another that we know not of. The other way is by prayer and ceremony to obtain the assistance, the protection of some phantom above the clouds. One way is to think, to investigate, to observe, and to follow the light of reason. The other way is to believe, to accept, to follow, to deny the authority of your own senses, your own reason, and to bow down to those who are impudent enough to declare that they know. One way is to live for the benefit of your fellow men, for your wife and children, to make those you love happy and to shield them from the sorrows of life. The other way is to live for ghosts, goblins, phantoms, and gods, with the hope that they will reward you in another world. One way is to enthrone reason and rely on facts, the other to crown credulity and live on faith. One way is to walk by the light within, by the flame that illumines the brain, verifying all by the senses, by touch, sight, and sound. The other way is to extinguish the sacred light and follow blindly the steps of another. One way is to be an honest man, giving to others your thought, standing erect, intrepid, careless of phantoms and hells. The other way is to cringe and crawl, to betray yourself, and to deprive others of the liberty that you have not the courage to enjoy. I see a world without the beggar's outstretched palm, the miser's heartless stony stare, the piteous wail of want, the pallid face of crime, the livid lips of lies, the cruel eyes of scorn. I see a race without the disease of flesh or brain, shapely and fair, the married harmony of form and use. And as I look, life lengthens, fear dies, joy deepens, love intensifies, the world is free. This shall be.
I'm going to talk about humanism and its emphasis on education. Humanism as a philosophy is supported by at least two prominent American organizations, the American Humanist Association and the Center for Secular Humanism. Although there are some philosophical differences, regarding spiritual or secular concepts of humanism. Both organizations emphasize reason and science as the best tools for the discovery of knowledge and the achievement of acceptable human goals. Shortly before his death, Paul Kurtz of the Center for Secular Humanism developed a statement titled 21 Principles of Humanism. One of the 21 principles states, "We are deeply concerned with the moral education of our children. We want to nourish reason and compassion." I understand this principle to include all educational include all education, and I choose it for special emphasis. It is not necessarily more important than the other 20 principles. For example, one states that we are concerned with securing justice and fairness in society and with eliminating discrimination and intolerance. Now, that's an especially important principle. However, my experience in working and living in developing countries where education standards are some places very dismal, it makes education stand out to me as an especially important issue. According to international studies, America is falling behind other nations in educational achievements. So I think we need to put more resources into all levels of public education. In America, K through 12 education is a primary responsibility of states, local government, and the private sector. In too many cases, schools are not adequately funded, resulting in spotty educational achievements. Following the humanist principle regarding education of youth, we need to step up and strengthen support of our public and private educational systems. We may need more federal oversight and money to help states and school districts take responsibility for improving the quality of schools. Accepting and acting on this affirmation of humanism would help our civil society to more adequately fulfill this very important societal obligation.
Dewey was a philosopher, psychologist, and educational reformer. He believed schools should play an integral role in perpetuating a democratic society and good citizenship. This role included encouraging good citizenship through empathy, compassion, and commitment to participatory public values. As a Unitarian and a humanist, Dewey proposed a secular makeover of religion. He argued that religious experience should no longer be mystical with a higher power, but a courageous and persistent devotion to desirable social goals. Therefore, a saint need not perform miracles, but would be an activist who collaborates with others near and far to improve life on the planet. As a teacher, I have tried to practice what Dewey taught. I encourage students to think, to experience the world they live in, and to consider different points of view. One of the most powerful experiences came while teaching in Illinois at a public lab school affiliated with Illinois State University. My colleague, Walter, my future husband, and I taught the same group of students, 7th through 8th grade. With each unit we studied, our students were sent into the community for a week-long community work experience. They actively participated in political campaigns for more than one candidate and more than one party, with, of course, parental permission. They spent time hiking and studying water quality with local naturalists and city waterworks personnel. They did volunteer work at nursing homes and preschools. They interviewed speakers who gave presentations about the Middle East from both an Israeli and Arab perspective. Our goal was not to tell them what to think, but to get them to question and to consider differing points of view. Many of these students admitted at the end of these encounters with different people that they were left confused and thinking in new ways. John Dewey remains relevant today, not only in education, but with the conflicts we see in a broader society. Dewey pointed out that forces which bar freedom, deny fullness of communication, divide human beings into antagonistic sects, all undermine the democratic way of life. In closing, in his words, we're all instructors to realize that the quality of mental process, not the production of correct answers, is the measure of educative growth, something hardly less than a revolution in teaching would be worth.
From the American Humanist Association, humanism is a philosophy of avid service for the greater good of humanity. Humanists believe that happiness is obtained by harmoniously combining personal development with work that contributes to the welfare of the community. I'll present several views of humanism, how humanism is working or not on a society scale. First, my own, and then of Bill Mallory's will be a counterpoint. My view was influenced from personal observations from the history of the land of Kosovo. The Battle of Kosovo was in 1385, 533 years ago. It was between the Serbian prince and the invading Ottoman Empire. The second battle of 1448 was between the Hungarian-led crusaders and the Ottoman Empire. The human scars of these battles still remain today. The recent war with the Serbians and the Kosovo Albanians was between March 1998 and June 1999. 80,000 Kosovo Albanians fled or were expelled during the war. After June 1999, 110,000 Serbians fled in fear of reprisals. Many, if not all, Serbian Orthodox churches and the mosques were ravaged. While I was there, I didn't see any undamaged houses of worship. My sister-in-law knows of a Kosovo Albanian family. They were good friends of their Serbian neighbor. At the beginning of the war, the Albanians were not allowed to buy bread. They asked their Serbian neighbor to purchase bread for them. They refused. During the expulsion, the Albanian family took refuge in their own house. The Serbian neighbor betrayed them. My wife and I were in Pristina, Kosovo in the spring of 2003 for several weeks. The following are some of my observations. I have many more. I like to wander around strange cities. I felt safe in doing this in Pristina. But in important parking lots, they check cars for bombs. There were car bombings in the city while we were there. We spent a weekend touring Kosovo and felt safe as Americans. except driving through a mostly Serbian city. We saw no functioning churches or mosques. We went to a Serbian Orthodox monastery. I understand this is where the Serbian popes were ordained. We checked in at a sandbag bunker manned by Italian NATO forces. We are escorted in by a soldier carrying an automatic weapon. We were met by nuns, no monks. They had relics from the burnt-out churches. All were damaged. All over the countryside, we saw burnt-out houses next to newly built ones. When the Albanians left, the Serbians burnt their homes and built new ones. When the Albanians returned, they did the same. The Serbians and Albanians did not work as a community. This trip has made a profound influence on my view of humanity. My conclusions from the point of a humanist: animosities run deep and last for many generations, not just in Kosovo. You know many other examples from the distant past to the present where one group persecutes another. As my sister-in-law's example shows, it trickles down to a person-to-person level. What is my role as a humanist? Personally, I feel I have little power on a large scale to make reasonable changes, but I can have an impact on caring for individuals. My volunteer philanthropic activities are primarily in this direction. Now we'll see if this works. The following is from Bill Mallory. He wrote this several months ago. I believe humanity will not destroy itself, for example, with nuclear weapons, but will eventually unite its civilizations. The gradual expansion in size and power and cooperation between them will bring this about. Consider the advance in size and cooperation through the centuries. In more recent time, look at the stabilization of civilization. European nations are gradually fighting less and cooperating more. The United States of America continues to be the foremost world power, resurrecting peace after two world wars. The Indian nation gained its independence from Great Britain without a major war. Most of the European nations becoming more united. I believe that isolation of Great Britain from continental Europe is a temporary situation. Recent trade agreements around the world will continue to expand. Two outstanding problems are the isolation between the Arabic and Western civilizations and the more general separation of the Western world from the Eastern one. These will probably take the longest period to solve. Some will argue that increasing powers of weapons, nuclear and chemical, will destabilize the world and bring about the destruction of world civilization. This seems increasingly unlikely as we see those cultures which possess such weapons hesitate to use them. But on a more optimistic note, Steve Pinker wrote a book entitled Enlightenment Now. I have not read it, nor do I expect to read it. I did read an interview of him by David Bornstein. He states that worldwide happiness has increased by 85%, though the United States is not among the 85%. He did state that. He doesn't mention the interval that this happened. Across the world, we live longer, healthier, safer, wealthier, freer, more peaceful, and more stimulating lives than those that came before us. 200 years ago, extreme poverty was 90%. Now it's 9.6%. Until recently, worldwide life expectation expectancy at birth was around 30. Now it is 71.